for this session. So the first thing I will ask you is just to go closer to us because we are not so much, right? And maybe the presenter can be really at the first range, please. It will be easier for the presentation. So this session aimed to just present people who did poster. So it will be a very short presentation, just 3 minutes, please, because we don't have a lot of time. So, and if we are very short in the presentation, we could have short time for question at the end of the session, if it's possible. So the first presenter, she's from Tunisia, and she will talk to you about carry-on plans, something like that.
So hello to you all. My name is Sarah Chouk. I will help Pierre Do during this for the animation during this session. So I'm also going to begin with a short presentation, but I'm going to switch in French since it's the language in which my poster is written. Donc, je m'appelle Sarah Chouk, je travaille à l'IRD de Tunisie, je suis agronome et je vais vous présenter un cas d'étude réalisé sur un terrain tunisien qui s'appelle la plaine de Kairouan. Alors ce territoire il est très homogène, aussi bien au niveau du relief, donc c'est une plaine, c'est plat, qu'au niveau des pratiques qui sont à peu près les mêmes sur tout ce territoire. Et les uniques singularités qu'on peut y observer, elles se font au niveau de ce qu'on appelle des zones de bas-fond. Alors déjà au niveau de la géomorphologie, puisque c'est des cuvettes, c'est des zones de 2 à 5 mètres de dépression par rapport au terrain naturel. Et c'est des zones dans lesquelles on va remarquer une activité agricole qui contraste par rapport aux terres avoisinantes de haute plaine. Alors nous, on s'est posé la question de savoir si ça a toujours été le cas, s'il y avait un contraste aussi marquant. Et on s'est proposé de reconstituer leur évolution depuis les années 1960 jusqu'à nos jours. Et on a fait ça en recoupant des histoires de vie, l'analyse de documents d'archives, des images aériennes, des documents d'archives en général, pour mettre en lumière les événements majeurs dans leur évolution, dans l'évolution de leur mise en valeur. Alors très rapidement sur les résultats, on peut parler de deux faits marquants. Le premier événement, c'est la construction alors amont de barrages écréteurs, puisque avant cette construction, ces zones, qui sont le lieu d'écoulement préférentiel, étaient également le lieu de fortes crues destructrices, ce qui est un peu difficile dans le cas d'une agriculture familiale très présente sur la zone. Et donc, avant la construction de ces barrages dans les années 1980, ces zones sont totalement délaissées, elles sont marginalisées. Le deuxième fait majeur, c'est le morcellement des parcelles, puisque en parallèle, jusque dans les années 2000, il y a une intensification agricole qui va progresser sur le territoire, qui va petit à petit réduire les parcelles, les grignotés qu'on peut voir sur la figure 2, qui montre l'évolution entre les années 60 et 2000. Et la superficie va se réduire petit à petit jusqu'à atteindre une superficie d'environ 5 hectares, ce qui est absolument insuffisant pour être économiquement rentable. Alors, puisqu'il n'y a plus de disponibilité foncière, que la plaine est saturée, les agriculteurs vont être obligés de retourner vers ces zones qui délaissaient auparavant, et ils seront confortés par l'absence de crues depuis donc la construction de barrages à leur amont. Alors pour conclure très rapidement, des expérimentations vont être menées dans ces zones de bas-fond par ce qu'on appelle de jeunes ruraux, qui vont mettre en avant tous les avantages que ces zones présentent pourtant, comme un renouvellement régulier de la couche arable du sol, donc une fertilité renouvelée, un apport d'eau supplémentaire par rapport aux terres de haute plaine. Et ces jeunes ruraux, donc, qui vont les mettre en valeur, oui, ils vont en tirer un revenu agricole, certes, ils vont réinvestir ce revenu agricole, oui aussi, mais cette fois sur les terres de haute plaine. Donc en fait, ces bas-fonds qui sont des lieux d'expérimentation, c'est aussi, on va dire, une activité surtout intermédiaire, une sorte de tremplin pour de jeunes ruraux qui visent une expansion agricole. Voilà. Je vous remercie.
Thank you for your presentation. Our next presenter is Maren Chabou is here.
Oh. I think he could present. The people absent could present later. If they come.
Okay. Okay. And Andriy Shakovsky, he's not here also. Okay. So, could you please come to the table and to present your work, please?
Good morning. This I am Mr. Thapong Chen Hanumat, an expert on irrigation engineering working at the Royal Irrigation Department of Thailand. Our poster is Thai Local Initiative for Integrated Governance of Surface Water and Groundwater. This is a way to maximize the effective use of surface water trust to reduce the groundwater uses. The initiative our poster this initiative is we apply the three coherent task mechanism to solve severe water shortage for the second crop in Yom River Basin in the north of Thailand, where the demand is about 5 times more than water supply in the irrigation area. Before the initiative, the farmer needs to pump the water from the shallow well, which is not enough for farming as well, because in dry season, in the peak time, the shallow well is empty. You cannot pump anymore. So we apply the T-coherent tax mechanism to solve this problem. The T-coherent tax mechanism we implement in 2005, incorporating local wisdom, lesson learned, and data analysis to the stakeholder participation. We use the social engineering and data management for solve this problem. In the first task, this one is T-coherent task. So in the first task, we used to cooperate among the related public agency in order to study the topographic of Yom River, to analyze the water in the Yom River and use the irrigation canal to be the reservoir, the temporary reservoir, to additional water storage, and to improve the mobile pump and cost for pumping the water to the irrigation area. Because in the dry season, the Yom River, we will have runoff about 3 cubic meters only. The second task about the participation of irrigation management. Yeah, the second task, the participation irrigation management, is to join specifically rotation of water delivery, planning between farmer and responsible public agency to set agreement rule and water delivery, and to construct temporary weir along tribute by volunteer. This one you can see the people construction the temporary weir in the Yom River and the tribute in the Yom River Basin.
Okay, thank you for your presentation. Maybe we can go back later if there is any questions. So our next presenter, he's from she's from Thailand also. Could you come, please? She's arriving. Okay.
Thank you very much. This is my poster. So basically, what I'm doing with my students, actually, Pasin, he's unfortunately, he cannot make it today. And I only have my poster, I don't have the slides. So I'm just going to explain. And if you have any questions, so please direct the questions to me. And my poster is upstairs. So if you kind enough and interested in my talk, please stop by. So I can probably answer the questions in more details. So basically what I'm doing here is it's about a province in Thailand. It's, the name is Suphanburi. It's located in the west of Bangkok. Some of you guys have been to Thailand before. So Suphanburi is actually a very agricultural intensive province. So the farmers, they use lots of fertilizers. So what I'm interested in is that I like to try to use a stochastic model to estimate some of the nitrate residuals, which is actually in the past we didn't know where exactly its nitrate comes from. So there's two possibilities, that the nitrates are from sewage. And another possibility is from fertilizers. So we went down to the province and investigate actually the source of the nitrate, and we try to take samples of our groundwater. So we only have a small budget at that time, so we only can gather around 60 samples of groundwater. And we found that some of the groundwaters that we collected are really contaminated with water, with nitrate. And it's kind of consistent with Greenpeace investigations. So Greenpeace also interested in this province, and they found that some groundwater wells are nitrate contaminated. So we got more budget from the university and some research fund institutes in Thailand. So we can collect more of 100 groundwater samples, and we found more of the evidence of nitrate contaminations. So the question is that, where is nitrate from? So we did some more investigation, and we found that not only nitrate contamination found in groundwater, we found that potassium is also a very high concentration in our samples. So we plot the relative concentrations. We found that the trends of both nitrate and potassium, they are very consistent together. So we finally can conclude that nitrate is actually originated from fertilizers. So we went down there and collect more samples from soil and also fertilization patterns from farmers. And we constructed the stochastic model to estimate the residual of the nitrate in soil and groundwater. So this is just the beginning of the stochastic model that we're doing. So in the future, we'll probably be able to identify more of the source zone of the maybe hot spots of the nitrate in our area. So if anybody is interested in my talk, please stop by at my poster, and maybe we can talk more about my work. And any questions, I would be happy to answer. Thank you.
Thank you for your presentation. Our next presenter is from Korea. His name is Namsin Park. Is he here in... Okay. Could you come?
Could you come, please?
Yeah.
That's not my poster.
It's not yours. Let's see.
No, it's not moving in this one direction.
Yeah. Oh, what's that?
This, is it yours?
This is yours.
Yep, yeah. Looks like it.
Okay. Sorry.
Hi, I'm Namsik Park from Korea. I teach at a Dong-A University. Let me see. Okay, this... this poster is derived from one of my graduate students who did the, okay, it's the cut. What? The first part is cut, so I can read it.
Just the title, it's the title.
Right, let me just.
Effect of sun,
right,
groundwater.
Okay. Yeah, let me still.
Not here?
Okay. Okay, effects of saline groundwater pumping for mitigating seawater intrusion in coastal aquifers. That's the title of my student's poster. Well, my research interest is in groundwater management coastal areas. And, well, let me give you a brief background about the poster itself. Well, saline water intrusion, seawater intrusion in coastal aquifers is a well-known problem. And if the seawater intrusion increases, then salinity increases not only in groundwater, also in unsaturated soil because of capillary rise. And the problem will be exacerbated by sea level rise due to climate change and higher evaporation expected due to temperature rise. So seawater intrusion is detrimental to agriculture as well. So to combat seawater intrusion, there are two means, well, hydraulic means. One more popular method is injecting fresh water in aquifers. So well-known example is in Southern California, where they have hundreds of wells to inject fresh water to push away seawater intrusion. And well, the advantage of freshwater recharge to combat seawater intrusion is that you increase your water freshwater resources. The disadvantage is that you need fresh water in the first place. And the freshwater recharge method is not applicable to low elevation areas where the higher water groundwater level is not good for agriculture.
30 seconds.
Okay. So the second mean about this poster is this seawater pumping, underground seawater pumping. So if you pump seawater, then you reduce the potential of the seawater, which will prevent intruding further into the inland. And also it lowers the groundwater level. So it can help agriculture as well. So, but the disadvantage of seawater pumping, saltwater pumping, and subsurface saltwater pumping is that you have to, what are you going to do with the saltwater pumped? It's not easy to get rid of it. But then, well, overall, it helps. And then you have to be careful, though, when pumping salt water, because if you...
Okay. Thank you for your presentation. We will go further, maybe, if we have time. Sorry. Our next presenter is from Thailand. Let's see.
I'm from Nelson University and also I'm a senior meteorologist of Thai Meteorological Department. I want to present my poster entitled Probability of Dry and Wet Spell in Northern Part of Thailand during El Nino, La Nina and Norman Event. As you may know, the water management for agriculture is a serious problem in Thailand due to the erratic of rainfall. The variability of rainfall depend on many factors, and El Nino Southern Oscillation, so-called ENSO, is the one factor that contributes the rainfall anomaly in Thailand. So therefore, if we can know the sequence of dry and wet spell in ENSO event, it will be useful for water management in crop growing season. So in this research, we use Markov chain technique to calculate probability of rainfall in of Dai and Westphal in 10-day time unit by using 25 meteorological station in northern part of Thailand. For the result of the research, we show on the digital map of level of probability of Dai and Westphal. For the result, we can conclude that in El Niño, the beginning of best period in rainy season is the more beginning is relatively late when compared to the normal event, and also in El Niño, we found that there are more wet dry area and intensity than normal event. But for the La Niña event, we found that there are more wet area. And okay, it's the result of my research will be distributed to the public on the website of Thai Meteorological Department, and it will use therefore the agriculturalist and water community usage will be used or information for in the view of the preserved asset in water for planning and management the reserve water or their purpose. This is all my result, and I will want to invite you to visit my poster for discuss and give comment for my research. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your presentation. Our next presenter, he's from Burkina Faso. He will talk us about irrigation support development program. Okay, we have to wait for his notes.
Hello, everybody. My name is Farid Traoré. I'm coming from Burkina Faso, and I'm going to present you 5 posters. It's about our program. The program is the Irrigation Development Support Program. The acronym in French is PADI. So I'll use the PADI, the name PADI. So first I would like to apologize for my English, because I'm not an English speaking person. Okay, so the PADI is a program founded by the Burkina Faso government and Belgian partners like APF and Wallonia Bruxelles International. Burkina Faso is a sub-Saharan country with mean annual rainfall between 350 millimeters and 1,200 millimeters. The rainy season goes from June to September or October, so it's 5 or 4 months, and it's insufficient to cover people's needs in terms of food growing. So the government is promoting irrigation during the dry season. So as can be seen in its name, the PADI aims to support development of irrigation in Burkina Faso. The program's specific objective is to improve technical capacities of the agricultural national agencies through the development of operational tools and capacity building. The direct beneficiaries of PADI are not farmers, but national agencies in charge of agriculture. So the national agencies have to implement the results of the PADI at farmers' level. So the strategy of the PADI is built around four main points. Sometimes we use results or project and not strategy. So I will talk about projects sometimes. So the strategy number one is to develop operational tools for the management of groundwater for irrigation farming. The strategy number two is to develop operational tools for the efficient management of agricultural water. The strategy number three is to develop operational tools for the protection of irrigation dams. And the number four is to build capacities of national and regional agencies in charge of agriculture. So now let's see in details the four results of the PADI. So let's start with the number one. Okay, so the number one is, excuse me. The number one is sustainable groundwater management for irrigated agriculture. The main objective is to conduct studies and establish quantitative and qualitative management strategy of groundwater resources for irrigated agriculture. The project is present in three target regions. So the main activities are delimitation of floodplains, applying hydrogeomorphological methods, using GIS and remote sensing methods, setting up piezometers and micropiezometers monitoring network, piezometric hydrometric meteorological water quality data collection, study groundwater exchanges between water table and rivers and between alluvial aquifer and deep aquifers. We are doing also quantitative and qualitative evaluation of groundwater resources, and at last, hydrological modeling. So that's it for the first result. So let's go to the number two. The number two is about agricultural water management. The main objective is to contribute to improving water management for agriculture at sub-basin level. And in this order, we are working to strengthen the capacity of national agencies in charge of agriculture in the design and implementation of water management tools. The project is also present in three regions. Our main activities for the result number two is using remote sensing, essentially change detection techniques, for irrigated area monitoring, developing or customizing agricultural water management tools like FAO CIMIS for irrigation schemes management, FAO AquaCrop to improve water productivity, and water resources monitoring. And the last main activity is capacity building. So that's it for the result number three, number two. For the number three is about protection of irrigation dams in Burkina Faso. And yeah, the main objective is to protect irrigation dams from erosion and sedimentation. Okay, the main activities are, first, evaluating of sediment inputs. So we are interested by the origin of sediment and identification of the appropriate scales of analyzing to reduce sedimentation in dams. We are interested also in developing support tools for the management of irrigation dams and their downstream watershed using the WIP tool for the dam water resources. We are developing also GIS tools for irrigation dams and their downstream watershed management. So it's about model of soil erosion, risk evaluation, and location of priority development areas for the protection of dams. And the last main activity is to prepare watershed scale management plan. So we are interested in planning of priority infrastructure of and farmers capacity building. So that's it for the result number three. So let's go to the last one. So the last result is to build capacity of the ministry in charge of agriculture in Burkina Faso. The acronym of this ministry is MARAZA. Okay. So the main objective is strengthen the ministry in charge of agriculture in the area of human skills and tools necessary for the implementation and monitoring of the national strategy for sustainable development and irrigated agriculture. This is NSSDIA. So the intervention mainly focused on the training of personnel involved in the implementation of this NSSDIA, the development of and dissemination of technical and economic referentials on irrigated agriculture in Burkina Faso, the operationalization of the monitoring and evaluation of the NSSDIA, the implementation of activities on integrated management of soil and crop fertility on the irrigated areas, and the implementation of demonstration site on drip irrigation. So this is what we are doing in the PADI. Our posters are upstairs, and I will be glad if you have questions or if you want to go deep in that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your presentation. Our next presenter is from Iran. Noza Gariman, is he here? Oh, okay, he's not here. Could you please come? Javad Monin.
Okay, good afternoon, everybody. I'm Mohammad Javad Monem, associate professor at the University of Tarbiyat Mudarris, Iran, Tehran. The work which is presented here is actually one of the research works which has been done by Mrs. Hossein Zadeh, one of PhD students of mine. The basic idea of the work is that we have a poor performance of irrigation networks, and one of the methods and the measures to improve the performance of irrigation system is automation. And usually automation as it is considered that can improve the performance, can improve the flexibility of the system, and can save water. However, the main feature of the problem is that automation by itself cannot do magic. It should be considered as a whole system within irrigation network. So the control structures, the check structures, and turnouts, automation should be considered together. And there are different scenarios for automation. In this work, we have compared three different systems of automation in one irrigation network, the Ghazbin irrigation network. We have considered the Amil gate and the Nerpik gate as a check structure and intake. We have considered the sluice gate as a check structure automated by P plus PR system and intake as a sluice gate. And the third system, we have considered the pivot weir with the automatic P plus PR control system as a check structure and the Nerpik gate. And we have compared these three systems together in main canal of irrigation network, Ghazbin irrigation network near Tehran. Five check structures and intakes are considered. And for delivery system, we have considered one of the high fluctuation of water with the high variation of discharge. And we have simulated the system using ICSS hydrodynamic simulation model. So three systems for the whole canal with five check structures and intakes has been modeled, and the, with a high variation of discharge has been simulated, and the performance of the system has been evaluated and compared. As as the results, it's not clear here from the table, but I just briefly explain that comparing the performance of the Amil gate and pivot wear and check structure sluice gate, they are performed well in the system. However, the performance of the pivot wear has been shown a better improvement, better performance in terms of the controlling of the water level and saving the water and providing better water delivery to the intakes. And that's all. The poster is upstairs and is available there for you to see the detail of that. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you for your presentation. Our next speaker is from he's from Korea. Chang Sung Oh, could you please come?
Hello, my name is Chang Sung Oh. I work in Rollaris Institute, Republic of Korea. Before I start my presentation, it's a very honor to be here to able to show and explain my research result. Okay, the purpose of this study are to simulation of the temporal and spatial distribution of salinity and understand the hydrodynamic mixing pattern between fresh water and sea water, and due to internal development. Implementation. So, and we suggest the water quality management measures for future freshening reservoir in Saemangeum reclaimed area. Okay, to achieve these objectives, our 3D dimensional numerical model is firstly calibrated using validation parameters such as your point difference and RMSE and AME. And three conditions are considered and compared numerical simulation result with each others according to internal development plans. The salinity before construction of inner dike as a case one and after construction of inner dike as a case two similar salinity patterns, but while the after construction of inner dike with dredging operations as a case three increases salinity in all seasons because of the increasing of water storage capacity and together with increase in water depth and resulting vertical stratification which induced to a stagnant time of water in bottom layers. So we have concluded that the hydrodynamic catalyst on Saemangeum reservoir is dominated by fresh water inflow from Mangyong and Dongjin. Mangyong and Dongjin are the two major watersheds in the vicinity of Saemangeum watershed, and the amount of seawater circulation amount of seawater circulation is important. So, and lastly, so we must consider the these factors, though it is very and rigorous and reasonable distribution of salinity due to internal development, implement, and development plans. So, and they play an important role in future water quality management for freshening reservoir. Thank you.
Thank you for your presentation. Our next presenter is from Ukraine. Petro Kovalenko is not here. Okay. Hamani Ali is not here also. Is Sung Hak Lee here?
Hello, I'm Sung Lee from Korea. I'm graduate student of Seoul National University, and my topic is estimating the stage storage curve in unmeasured reservoir. This is important in South Korea and North Korea because we have no information about North Korea. We have to estimate the stage of status of water storage level in by using satellite image. So my topic is estimating on measured reservoirs water storage using information from satellite image. So I use the Boland and Miller's method, and I classify the 104 reservoir, and result is almost reservoir is gorge reservoir. That's why the this is 104 reservoir is in mountainous area. So that's the why the result is gorge. So in Korea, so we have to more detailed classification in reservoir in gorge mountainous area. So this is my next topic, and we apply the result in North Korea. Thank you.
Thank you for your presentation. Our next presenter is also from Korea.
Hello everyone, my name is Hang-yeon Lee. I'm co-author of this poster, so I have the presentation instead of the Jin-yong Choi. Now you can see my name on the top of the posters. And generally, when you quantify the irrigation water, generally you use the meteorological station data. It means the station covered various areas, so in each crop area use the same information about the climate data. So this poster, the topic of this poster is to develop some soil moisture and irrigation model which can apply more high resolution climate data. So this poster is divided two parts. One, the first part is about some high resolution climate model. We call the WAF model, weather regional forecasting model. This model provides the 10 days forecasting weather data, and special resolution is the 217 by 217. It's quite high resolution. And second part is about some irrigation model based on the soil moisture changer. This model can apply some data type of grid type. For example, some grid type soil data from the GIS. Also, the WAF model provides grid type forecasting climate data. Now the key point of this topic is about some connection between the WAF model, high resolution model, to the irrigation and soil moisture model. So we apply some upland areas to this model, and then we developed some kind of some soil moisture and irrigation model. So when you see the right part, it is some result of this irrigation model. So you can see that each grid has got different soil moisture or different irrigation because they has got different high resolution climate data. That this research is very key of research, so we keep trying the developing more priceless the climate data. Also, we validate some the irrigation model with the real field data. So maybe next year, not next year, next time I can show you the more developing the result. But if you interesting about this model and high resolution climate, we can talk upstairs. Just come by and enjoy the talking. And then I'm working in the Water Food Energy Nexus Initiative in the Texas A&M. So if you're also interested in some kind of nexus system, we can talk to each other and we discuss more high topics. Thank you.
Okay,
very much.
Thank you for your presentation. Our next presenter is from Nepal. Could you?
Hello everyone, I'm Krishna Prasad Rijal from Nepal. I work in Department of Irrigation. My poster is about improving water productivity and rice, how and why. In this presentation, I'd like to summarize this presentation in 4 points mainly. The first point is what is rice and what is the importance of rice in the world. The second point is what is the implication of improving water productivity on rice. And the third point is what are the current issues, what are the current practices, and the fourth point is way forward and conclusions. The first point is the rice is a staple food for about 3.5 billion people in the world. Most of them are from Asia. And also, rice receives water of almost one-third of total irrigation water in the world. So the improving water productivity on rice has very big importance. And the next thing is, rice is the largest irrigated cereal in the world, which covers almost 47% of irrigated cereal area. And then my next point is, what is the implication of water saving in rice? If we only save about 10% of irrigation water on rice, then it saves about 150,000 million meter cube of water, which is almost one-fourth of total fresh water used for non-agriculture purposes. So we can save a large amount of water from irrigating rice if we increase water productivity by a very small amount. And what are the issues in irrigating rice? There are some problems in irrigating rice. The main point is that we use very high amount of water in land preparation of rice, mostly in Asian context. The other point is we use continuous submergence for irrigating rice, which is wasteful use of water in rice. Research has shown that continuous submergence is not necessary for high productivity. And the other point is, during the conveyance, in the conveyance structures, water loss of water is very high, mainly in developing countries where there is online canals prevail. And if we can check the losses from the system, then we can save a large amount of water. Similarly, in developing countries, water is used as complementary for other inputs, such as fertilizers, improved seeds, and pests, because all these inputs are not adequately available in the rural area, and we use more and more water so that they think they can improve the productivity. This is the context of developing countries. Yeah, please. And then, so what is the way out? We should invest adequately and we should develop technologies and disseminate to the rural people for improving water productivity. The next point is we should make various awareness and incentives for the people at the root level. And this is the, I think, way forward for improving water productivity. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your presentation. I will ask Dr. Sophia to come if she is here. Okay, she is not here. Is Ligan Gyana Gopta Savitrama is here? Oh, he's not here. And Michael Davidson, is he here?
Good afternoon, I'm Michael Davidson. I'm an irrigation consultant, been working since 1972 as a farmer, academic, researcher, and marketer of irrigation equipment. So we all know the statistics of how much we need to increase food production and that we have to do it in a climate smart, friendly way. And we all know the constraints and barriers to doing that. There's social constraints, governance constraints, weather constraints. And one of the things we're talking about here, and very frequently, is the constraint of innovation. And this is based on my experience, and I challenge anyone here, I challenge the development community, to identify a gap in the production, in the engineering quality, and the availability of irrigation products to reach tripling of yields anywhere in the world. And I believe we're not missing a single product, we're not missing a methodology, we are not missing a tool. The difference between the North and the South essentially is how irrigation equipment is distributed. In the North, what we have is you see on the triangular relationship over there, there are three key players to making agricultural irrigation work in the United States, in Australia, much of Western Europe, some places in South America, and in isolated instances in East Africa. On one corner of the triangle, you have the farmer, of course. On the second corner of the triangle, you have the manufacturers. And the third is the distributor, not the distributor of the final product, the distributor of equipment, including seeds, herbicides, pesticides, everything. That is an interlinked, interdependent relationship. The manufacturer doesn't make a dime unless he sells to his distribution network. The distributor doesn't make a dime unless he successfully or she successfully sells to the grower. The grower doesn't make a dime unless their system is perfectly designed. That is the relationship that works. That is what is missing, in my view, every place I work in East and Central Africa. So, just as an example, in the lower right, we have the differences between one of these drip kits that someone throws off the back of a truck and gets yields of about 15 tons in potatoes per hectare. We went in, I was the advisor, but we ended up working with a professional irrigation distributor supported by the manufacturer, and we quadrupled the yields with no problem. And all we did was change the emitter spacing from 50 centimeters to 30 centimeters. So this is a relationship that works, and it is very, very simple to do. So the last thing we need to do is provide manufacturing of drip and everything else regionally in Africa, because we can't continue just to import everything, because then you don't have hand-on support. It sounds maybe too simple, but that's the relationship that works. And it's a question of institutional and organizational relationships that make irrigation work. Irrigation systems break down every single day. I can tell you that from experience. Every single day, the grower needs support from the dealer. And it's not just the dealer who sells stuff. but it's pure, it's technical support, providing stock of spare parts, training, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I can go into in great detail. As you can see, I'm really passionate about this. Anybody wants to discuss it, I can talk about it all day long. Thank you.
Thank you for your presentation. Our next speaker, Teresa Cortes. It's not a woman.
Your name?
What's
Guillaume? Guillaume? Yeah, you can take the microphone.
Okay, I have a confession to make. I was prepared to speak in French, but I guess nobody can understand them. Sawadee krab, namaste. Assalamu alaikum and good evening, everybody. We are, to be very, very simple, I will be very, very short. We are a pipe producer. Then we're going to present you the less expensive solution for the transport of the water under pressure, from 16 bar pressure to 25 bar pressure. Then we have the pipe with the less expensive. It's oriented PVC pipe. Then it's a PVC pipe, but with a special treatment who make him more thin and then more light. And we need like two times less material to produce it, because we treat him with a mechanical process. Sorry. And then if you want, anyway, more information about our pub, we are the only manufacturer to have this process. Then it's a great innovation on the production process of the pipe. Then you can visit us. We have our poster upstairs. And don't hesitate to visit us. But we are very concerned about the problematic of irrigation around the world, and we are selling our pipe all around the world. Then we could be a good solution, very economic and ecologic also, for the irrigation all around the world. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your presentation. Is there anyone who did not present and who had to present? Okay, could you come?
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Sahab Marwan, a PhD student from Tunisia. So I will present my poster about distributed large-scale and saturated soil properties of a semi-arid area of Kairouan Plain, which is located in central of Tunisia. You can move to the objective or the main purpose of this study is to estimate soil properties by using different methods at a local scale. And after, we will try to use pedotransfer functions to specialize the soil properties based on a texture soil map. So the first methods used is the Birken methods. It consists on infiltration test over 18 fields. The second method consists on analyzing evaporation tests.
The microphone,
please. Evaporation tests, which consist on analyzing dry down periods, based on soil moisture, dry down periods, and we use it also the pedotransfer functions to complete information extracted from Birken methods and evaporation ones. For analyzing our interpretation of our results, so we combine the information about soil texture and structure. And we can find a relation between texture and structure to classify the KS, the hydraulic conductivity at saturated hydraulic conductivity at saturation with soil texture and structure. And we analyzed also the results, and we identified that the Weston pedo transfer function is the most adapted for our region, and we can use it this function to specialize the soil properties by using based on the soil soil texture map produced from Landsat images. And thank you for your attention.
Okay. We still have some time. Has everybody presented, or is there, still people? Okay. I'm sorry, sir. Since we have some time and you haven't finished your presentation, would you like to redo it again, or is it fine?
I'm almost done.
You're done. Okay. Okay, so thank you. We have approximately 15 minutes if you want to ask some questions. Yeah, okay.
Please, could you wait the microphone?
Well, did you say that you pipe withstand pressure of up to 15 or 20 bar? 25 bar. That's a lot of pressure. That's almost like a metal pipe. I mean, fit 25 bar. And thin. That's well, very interesting. I was thinking that I heard wrong. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments on your presentation up there?
Thank you. Just one quick question to Professor Park. And maybe after the questions and his answer, I probably have some announcement for the next year conference in our country. So if you don't mind, can we do it?
Yeah.
Thanks. Okay. So first questions to Professor Park. I didn't really catch what you, the advantage of pumping the seawater. I understand the salt water barrier by injecting fresh water into the groundwater wells, but that's kind of cost very costly and price you know, it's very expensive. In Thailand, we also have the saltwater intrusion problem, and I kind of think that it's getting worse, and we probably need to be prepared for that. So can you probably explain to us in more detail of why you think that instead of doing freshwater injection, but you think that saltwater pumping is supposed to be more advantage in what can, why is that? And in terms of cost, is that supposed to be more cheaper or something? Or maybe you have more advantage on whatever technical issues or something like that? Please explain. Thank you.
Well, you asked too much, too many questions. I don't think I remember any, all of those. But the advantage, chief advantage of saltwater pumping is that it can be applied to low-lying area with high groundwater level already. Then, well, pumping salt water instead of if you inject fresh water, it will even raise the groundwater level even higher. So that's not an option. But if you pump salt water, it reduces, lowers the groundwater level, and also shrinks the size of saltwater wedge in the in the soil. So it will lower the water table and also will lower the, capillary rise. So, and it also reduces the salinity in the unsaturated soil as well. So that's one key advantage. In terms of energy, well, you can do it cheaper by, well, using the tidal fluctuation. Well, actually, you can do it even zero energy pumping. So, that's not included in the poster, but if you're interested, you can, well, we can talk later. Did I miss any? Okay, thank you.
So for the announcement, so next year we're gonna have the meeting. It's like second World Irrigation Forum in Chiang Mai, Thailand. And I heard that Teres, you can speak Thai, sweaty crap. So maybe next year, if anybody is interested, please stop by and pick up these documents. So it's a very nice one, expensive. You already have done it, so please pick them up. And we don't want to bring them back to Thailand, so please. So Chiang Mai is a very, very attractive province, and we will have a very well-organized conference. So if anybody is interested, we have probably student sessions and also professional session, and also people from irrigation area, so probably interested, and also maybe exhibitors who are interested in going to Thailand. Tonight we will have Thai night, but it's by invitation only. But if anybody get invitation tickets, so please join us. We will serve Thai food, and we have cultural Thai dance and Loy Kothong festival. So it's very interesting. So, but if you guys miss the Thai night tonight, so next year please find a chance to fly to Thailand and join our conference. Thank you. You have anything to announce? No. Okay. Thank you.
Is there any? Okay, there, just there.
I didn't know that there will be a question-answer session, so I didn't write down the name. But the gentleman who's, who spoke about a new paradigm of sustainable consultant, is that right? Is Davidson Michel? Yeah. Okay. Great. Thank you, sir. My question is that you said that in certain parts of the world, there is this three-dimensional thing that is being done, which means the other half of the world is doing it badly or not doing it at all. Now, I think the first thing is that the bulk of the growing users of the modern drip irrigation systems actually are coming from there and not in this place, right? Second aspect is that you know that there is a huge amount of government subsidies, etc., that is involved. So how do we get out of this rut? One. Secondly, what is the obligation of the company on follow-up after-sales service, or the distributor for that matter? Because I come from India, sir, and I see the reality on the ground. Right? So I think I'd like to have your opinion on this, because it doesn't suggest a way forward for us. You know?
Right. So really good question. I come from kibbutz, so I'm a socialist, if you want, a communist, but I think this industry has to be run by private industry, right? Governments should support it, tax breaks maybe, incentives, rebates, but you have to let the private industry work. Otherwise, there's no skin in the game, right? The World Bank is supposed to reduce poverty around the world. The head of the World Bank makes $750,000 after taxes, whether or not, you know, anyone comes out of poverty. So there has to be skin in the game. The cardinal rule in irrigation, the way this works, is that the manufacturers, it's an unwritten but maybe informal rule, but very strictly enforced, the distributor never ever, ever sells anything to the grower, never sells anything to the distributor, never sells anything to the farmer. Everything goes through the distribution channel. So the warranties, the freight, everything is absorbed by the distributor, and it's in his interest or her interest to train as many growers as possible, so he increases his sales. This is the way it works. So the obligation, I think, on the part of the manufacturers, I think really East African, especially growers, need to insist and say that the companies that we will support are the ones who are resident in the region. That's why, if you saw another poster there, I just noticed it by someone from Malawi who said that the reason why drip irrigation doesn't work in Malawi is because no one has access to inexpensive drip irrigation products. They're not around, right? So you need regional manufacturing. The final thing I want to say, about this is that 75% of all jobs in agriculture in the Northern Hemisphere are not on-farm jobs, 75%. So the opportunity for employment using this model is huge. The employment in manufacturing, driving trucks, driving forklifts, deliveries, and then everyone who works at distribution channel, they make up 75% of all agriculture-related jobs in the Northern Hemisphere. And they're missing entirely.
Sorry to say this. You said two interesting things. Now you said skin in the game. Earlier you said innovation. Right? May I ask you a real question? In the last 30 years, what improvement have you seen in the drip business that caters to the small farmers of the world that you and I should be proud of? Please.
Okay. So there's a couple of things there. One is moral hazard, the concept of moral hazard, that I don't know if you saw this, the Grand Challenge Securing Water for Food, USAID competitive bids that went out. You know, you can put in a bid for an innovative product, right? And they give hundreds and millions of dollars to support these inventions, if you will. And the one who won last year wanted at least a less expensive drip product to sell to Africa. And here's what he got. He said, I have a polyethylene tube. I have a laser cutter that can drill holes at any distance you want, and all the holes are uniform. And he turned it on, and it sprays like the soaker hose that we had 50 years ago, right? So what do we have to be proud of? We have everything from 4 mil to 20 mil in terms of the wall thickness of drip irrigation. We have compensating, we have non-compensating. We have filters from half inch to 45, 48 inches. We've got injection. We have everything you need. But this idea of patronizing, excuse the expression, which is moral hazard, saying that what is good enough for the Northern Hemisphere is too good for the Southern Hemisphere. So the way to reduce pricing is to have local manufacturing.
Let me tell you, sir, this year I am the award winner, SWFF. I'm getting $1 million. Having said that, I'm receiving it in Amsterdam next week. Okay, but that's not the point. The point I'm saying is the innovations are really coming from elsewhere. The industry seems to be selling its old methods. That's all I'm trying to plead.
Right. That's right.
Whereas they have all the money in the cloud and they're doing business as usual. Innovations can, there's no way. The entry barriers are too large, you know that.
We should go outside. We can go on forever and ever. But we don't have a basic disagreement. The North has to start bringing stuff to the South. They have to do it.
Okay, thank you for your questions. Maybe you can continue later because now we have a little, you can have time to discuss about the poster in the exhibition hall. So I invite you all to go to the exhibition hall to discuss about your poster also. Thank you for your attendance and thank you.